The attackers were also short of ammunition, only firing occasionally, their bullets chipping stone splinters from the thick walls.
It's getting pretty close. Best wait now and stop shooting. That way, we can at least be sure that every round buys us a corpse when they come in at us.
JB suddenly scrambled down to join them.
Time's come now. They're gathering for the big charge, about 150 yards down the hill, behind a tall hedge to give them cover. This is it.
I knew that little what's-his-name would be too late.
Abe. His name's Abe.
Once you've lived with love, then you cannot truly ever live again without it.
Doc was pleased with the aphorism. He was snug inside his sleeping bag, lying on his back, his knees drawn up slightly into something like the fetal position. He'd had a vivid dream that faded even as he slithered back toward waking. He'd been on a railway train with Emily and the children, making a transfer to another platform for another destination. But he'd left a carry-all and gone back to retrieve it. By the time he'd chased across the rambling station after his family, they were already aboard the next train. The train had been grotesquely full, with people hanging out of doors, squeezed through open windows. It was out of the question for Doc to board the packed coaches nearest him. The train began to move off, shuddering with its load.
Shortly. Wait for me!
What?
The night was still, with a breeze that seemed to spill over the end of the Box Canyon, out and along to the open plateau beyond. The fire was quite dead, the moonlight gleaming on the pile of soft white ashes. Judas was lying down asleep, still tethered securely to the tree by the pond. Doc's nostrils twitched. In his Victorian youth, he'd often smoked, either small black cigarillos or a meerschaum pipe that he believed made him look grave and mature. Since being dragged into the Deathlands, he totally abandoned the foul weed, and had found his sense of smell and taste had both improved by quantum leaps and bounds. There was the tang of sagebrush, the faint scent of the fire, the indescribable odor of water and wet earth, his own sweat, the film of oil that coated the action of the Big Lama lying by his side.
Something else?
The scent was elusive, bringing back a memory of something from his distant past. Doc lay still, his brow furrowed, allowing his dozing mind to free associate as it sought the reference for the slightly acrid smell. A trip out with the family? A dull, damp afternoon in a large city? Perhaps it had been on one of their visits to Manhattan. But where had he smelled that odd acidic scent? Little Rachel hadn't liked it. He was sure of that.
Nasty, Papa.
Rachel's little face screwed up with distaste as she peered in through the bars.
Bars. The cage. The zoo. The lion house.
Doc felt his heart leap in his throat with the sudden fear. For several erratic, jerky beats of the heart, Doc found himself utterly unable to move a muscle. He lay there, staring fixedly at the sky, his breathing fast and shallow, aware that the scent was stronger and closer. Control eased back into his body, and he started to turn his head to the left, infinitely slowly. The cougar was crouched on its haunches, its belly down in the dry dirt, less than 20 feet away from Doc. Its golden eyes gleamed directly into his, fixed on him with an unearthly, blankly unemotional stare. For a few moments, Doc found that he'd forgotten how to swallow and breathe. His mouth was sandpaper dry, his tongue feeling 8 sizes too large for his mouth. He knew that there was nobody within 20 miles who could come to his rescue. Even so, shouting for help was a physical impossibility. He tried to judge how big the predator was, but his mind refused to cope with the question. Over the years, Doc had seen other pumas, but they'd all been somewhere between 6 and 10 feet in length. This monster was close to 25 feet, looking from the wedges of muscle across shoulders and back to weigh around half a ton. The feathery tip of its long tail moved back and forth. There was enough light for Doc to be able to see the tremors that ran across the powerful corded muscles, giving warning that the mutie animal was literally trembling on the edge of staging its attack. Out of the corner of his eye, Doc could see that Judas wasn't going to save him this time. The mule was still locked away in deepest sleep. Eternity seemed to pass. Doc had cramps in his legs from the desperate struggle not to move or do anything that might finally trigger the cougar's murderous assault. As long as he was completely still, there was the 1 in 1,000 chance that the creature might lose interest and simply go away. 1 in 1,000,000, actually, said the tiny, scared voice inside Doc's head. Doc tried to remember everything he'd ever read about attacks by big cats. Often they brought up the powerful hind legs to disembowel their prey, or they would use their front paws to slap at the victim, their claws ripping away chunks of flesh like a butcher's cleaver. But a cougar of this size could easily take a full-grown man's skull into its mouth and crunch it like a ripe apple. Doc shivered.
It is not death itself that I fear, but the manner of my passing.
The cougar's head snapped up at his words, and Judas stirred in his sleep. Doc lay between the two animals, and he hadn't a scintilla of doubt that the cougar would take him first. The noise of his slaughter would rouse Judas, but the mule would be equally helpless against a predator of that size.
Sorry, Judas.
He actually managed to smile at the thought that his famous last words would be addressed to a vile-tempered mule and wouldn't be heard by human ears. The leg cramps were insufferable now, and Doc could no longer stop himself moving. He wriggled to one side of his sleeping bag, embracing the relief that the change of position brought him. Lying partly on his side, he found that his right arm was freed from the confines of the heavy bag. The cougar simply watched curiously as the old man wormed his hand into the dirt at his side until it encountered the cold weight of the llama. For the first time since he'd been tugged from sleep, Doc glimpsed the feeble candle glow of hope. If he could bring up the blaster, cock it, aim it, and fire, he risked another sideways glance. The predator responded by changing its own position, moving into a menacing crouch, its hindquarters rising in the air, the back legs braced to pounce. The tail was still moving, more and more slowly. And then it stopped. With fluid ease, Doc sat up and leveled the llama. Abe went around a bend in the narrow winding highway, carefully steering the team past a substantial pothole, knowing that the delicate wheels of the hearse wouldn't stand up to any serious jolting. Once he'd gotten them hitched, they hadn't made bad progress, but the sun was already well up, glinting off the distant expanse of the sea beyond the ruins of the ville. Abe had reined the horses in at the top of a steep hill, levering on the clumsy brake, appreciating for the first time just how vast Seattle had been. Then he realized the utter hopelessness of his lonely quest, the impossibility of trying to locate three men among the endless barren wilderness of fallen stone and iron.
Up, man who doesn't try doesn't get. That's what Trader always used to say.
Abe released the brake and drove the hearse onward. He had seen that the road went down into one more dip, then breasted a shallow rise, close by what it seemed like the ruins of a pre-dark water tower. From then on in, it had looked all downhill. Doc's first sensation was one of impending sickness. It was a good 20 seconds before Doc remembered what had happened before he'd slipped into unconsciousness. The roaring leap of the monstrous cougar, and the explosion of his gun still ringing in his ears. Now he was aware of other noises raging around him. Doc wiped his mouth with the back of his hand and looked toward the pool of water. Judas was standing, his back pressed against the tree, the tethering rope as taut as an iron bar. The mule's head was back, his eyes rolling white in the moonlight, facing the mutie predator that was moving at the edge of the dark pool that lay under the shadows at the head of the Box Canyon. The trusty llama hadn't missed its target after all. The thing was badly wounded. The lower part of its mouth had been destroyed, leaving its tongue to flop obscenely onto its blade.